here with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thanks for being with us. The Trump administration has labeled agriculture as a critical industry in the face of the coronavirus pandemic. And so this allows farms to continue operating as usual amid current and potential restrictions put in place to stem the spread. And the declaration last week from the Homeland Security Department applies to the entire food and agriculture production system. So farmers, how are you handling the COVID-19 situation? How's your farm doing? Dairy farmers, with restaurants and schools closed, is your supply affected? Do you have an oversupply or undersupply of milk right now? We're at 800-642-1234. John Shutsky is a professor and extension specialist in the Department of Agricultural Engineering at UW-Madison. John, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you very much, Kate, for having us on today.
And Mark Stevenson is here. He's a dairy policy analyst and director of the UW Center for Dairy Profitability. Mark, welcome back to you.
Well, thank you, Kent. Kate, happy to be here.
Well, Mark, let's start with you. As you're watching the COVID-19 spread across the U.S. and the world, step back for us and tell us how farms are affected here from this pandemic.
I think the first and most obvious way that they'll be impacted will be by milk prices. And, you know, even before the virus came to the U.S., as soon as we started to get news of this over in China, the markets were worried about, the slowdown in exports to that country and others. And about by mid-January, we began to see price opinions on futures markets begin to decline really rather sharply. And, you know, this would be something that markets could handle, dairy farmers could handle ordinarily, but we need to put that in the context that this is on the back of 5 years of relatively low prices for farms. So this is a real problem in what we expected to be a price recovery year.
John, what have you been hearing from farmers about the milk prices?
Well, we've been concerned for the last several years, obviously, and it's been a big stressor for a number of the farming families. And that's been the context that I've been talking with lots of people. I've been doing work on stress management and health for farmers. And I think as we kind of got towards the second half of 2019, it seemed like maybe there were some glimmers of hope. And I've been cooped up like a lot of people here and have had some conversations on social media and places. And I think people are quite concerned more than anything.
So quite concerned. And is it basically a wait and see right now, Mark? Are farmers actively taking steps on their farm? Are we going to see more bankruptcies?
Well, we certainly could. And I suspect we'll continue to see relatively high rates of farm exit this year. Bankruptcies, while the pace has been up over the last couple of years, have not been at a level that is highly concerning to people, but it's an indication of financial stress. So, you know, I think it's going to be a problem. But farms are concerned about an absolute loss of their markets as well. So would a dairy plant close? Would their milk not have a place to go? That's certainly a bigger and more abrupt concern to a dairy farm.
Yeah, we're going to take a look at the supply chain here in a moment, talking with Mark Stevenson, who heads up the UW Center for Dairy Profitability. John Shutsky is here as well, an Extension Agricultural Safety and Health Specialist at UW-Madison. Your thoughts as well on how your farm is doing? Do you work on a farm? Have you shifted your operations since the COVID-19 outbreak? How is it doing right now? How are your farm staff holding up? Can you do the social distancing? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Mark, work through the supply chain with us, if you will, especially at the ports of entry. What happens if ports shut down for milk and other commodities trying to enter and exit the U.S.?
Well, we do export somewhere around 15% of our milk production in the form of dairy products, and we make decisions about sales And if we get the product on a ship here and in a container and head it off to somewhere halfway around the globe, then we've had ports that have been closed in areas like China, and those ships are just stuck waiting out there in the port to be unloaded. That's a real problem. It backs things up all the way through a supply chain. So port closure is a problem. We now see that, of course, on the West Coast with ports like Los Angeles being shut down. So we aren't getting products either offloaded into the U.S. or unloaded for export out of the U.S.
How about the situation with our milk haulers? We see restaurants and schools closed. Is that a major issue right now for farmers, John?
Well, and I might defer more to Mark on how the haulers are doing in terms of people being absent from work, or certainly if there's a plant that is shut down, you're going to see a lot less milk out being hauled on the highway. We're a little bit concerned right now about where that milk goes. We've been working on some guidance for that. But Mark, I don't know if you wanted to speak to the other question.
Well, a large proportion of the milk in this state is picked up by very small businesses. These are people who maybe own one truck or possibly two. And under those circumstances, it's not likely that they have a lot of backup reserves, you know, to take over should one of them become sick. And if the milk is produced daily on a farm, it has to be picked up daily and taken to the plant. So that's a break in a link of our supply chain, you know, starting at the farm level. If the milk can't be picked up and delivered, if you don't have an alternative for that, then it would just have to, in the short term, be disposed of.
John, I understand you're leading an effort to deal with the coronavirus in the ag industry by putting together a lot of resources. Can you tell us about what you're doing there?
Yeah, Cooperative Extension here in Wisconsin is actually working across agriculture, but all of our program areas. That would include looking at issues connected to families, family finances, small businesses, youth and children, and looking at some of the needs that they might have, especially kids that are now obviously off of school, parents that are dealing with not only having to work at home, but also dealing with childcare at the same time. So we're looking at the entire range of things. But within agriculture, we're quite concerned about some of these, both the economic issues, but also it's just so critical that our farmers take this issue super seriously and that they work to stay healthy. So there's quite a bit of work being done on helping to protect the health of farmers, but also their workers. When we talk about the supply chain and processing plants and milk haulers, we also have to think that a lot of these bigger dairy farms and even some of the middle-sized dairy farms have a large number of workers these days. And so we want to make sure that we're doing everything to get that same social, physical distancing out to those workers and the kinds of protective things that they need to be doing so that they're healthy and out there and able to milk cows and do the work that farmers need to do.
This hour, we have John Shutsky there, professor and extension specialist with the UW-Madison Department of Biological Systems Engineering. And we have dairy policy analyst Mark Stevenson with us with the UW-Madison Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics. Do you have staff working on your farm? Can your farm workers practice social distancing? Have you found this difficult? Have you changed farming practices due to the spread of COVID-19? Share your situation for us, your tips, your questions. They're all welcome. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Mark Stevenson and John Shutsky here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Farm groups in recent days had been concerned about the potential for movement restrictions put in place to limit exposure of the virus, including the potential for an interruption of shipments needed for planting season. So we're checking in with how agriculture and production is holding up amid the pandemic. Dozens of farm groups sent a letter to President Trump last week to address pressures on the food and the feed and the eggs supply chain to meet the consumer demand. Do you supply livestock feed or work at a feed mill? How has business changed? Are you struggling to distribute quality forage? Are you a milk hauler? What are you seeing out there right now? Share your situation, your questions, 800-642-1234. We have Mark Stevenson, who leads the UW Center for Dairy Profitability. And John Shutsky is here, specializes in agricultural safety and is a UW-Madison professor in biological systems engineering. So, Mark, let us look at farm workers. The U.S. agriculture depends on migrants. And farm workers, many of whom come from Mexico on seasonal worker visas. Now we see U.S. embassies and consulates, they're closed in Mexico. Will this closure affect Wisconsin dairy farmers?
Well, it could, but if we aren't having people moving in either direction, either to Mexico from up here, while they've been working, or from Mexico coming up here, then maybe we'll be staying a little bit closer to status quo. But, you know, having an adequate workforce is certainly a big concern of our farms.
John, let's take a look here at social distancing. Right now, cleanliness is very vital, wiping down surfaces, washing hands to help stop the spread. And the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is recommending social distancing. How difficult is that on the farm?
You know, Kate, unlike a lot of other industries, when people are farming, they're oftentimes working. We have in many farms lots of workers, but they're not often in crowds or in close proximity with one another. So the potential for spread, for person-to-person spread, is actually probably not as big of a concern as it might be if you were working in an inside office environment. And I think that is actually something that could lull people into a little bit of a false sense of security, because you're also doing things like sharing. If you've got 5 workers or 10 workers, you're probably sharing restrooms, you're sharing break areas. If the farm has an office that a worker comes and checks into in the morning, everything that that worker might touch, whether it's the doorknob or they sign in with a pen or they punch a card, we just need to make sure that we're really, really thoughtful about the potential spread for infection. The other thing that we are working on, you had asked earlier about some of this statewide response. We did have a team that came together last week and put together some guidelines, which are exactly the same as what CDC is putting up. If you have workers who wake up in the morning and they're feeling ill, they have a fever, they have some of these symptoms, we're strongly urging people to let their employees know to stay home. A lot of these workers are Spanish-speaking, at least in the dairy sector. So it's also crucial that you be communicating on a daily basis, not trying to frighten people, but giving them information in the language that they can understand, being honest, being open, and making sure that those workers know that we're all in this together and we need the farm to remain open and viable. And the jobs that are connected to the dairy sector are so huge. So we just need to be really cautious to take it seriously. The other thing I'll just say, if you're a farmer, farmers are you know, running around this time of year getting machinery ready. They're probably visiting machinery dealers, maybe going to the co-op to order fertilizer, those sorts of things. So as many things as you can be doing, either on the web, on the telephone, by email, by text messaging, it's just really important that we try to avoid all types of unnecessary contact.
And if we look at the demographics, the average farmer is aging. A quarter are over 65, and that is certainly a risk when it comes to the spread of COVID-19 and who is at risk. Is that something that you're looking at?
It is something that we're concerned about. The average farmer in Wisconsin is about almost 59 years old. And if you compare that to the general population, our farming community and the principal farm operators, as defined by the U.S. Census of Agriculture, is about at least 10 to maybe 15 years older than the average worker in the rest of the population. And we do know, well, as you said, a quarter of our workers, a quarter of our principal farm operators are above the age of 65, and there's 10% that are above age 75. And we know from the work that's been done by the Chinese CDC, by some other countries, South Korea being an example, where they have pretty good data about people who have gotten sick and have recovered, and then other people who have gotten sick from this virus and have ended up in hospitals, ICUs, on a ventilator, and in fact died. We know that anybody who's above the age of 60 is at particularly a higher risk. So with that farming population being older, again, that's something that we really do need to take to heart. All of the social distancing and the efforts to sanitize and clean surfaces is just super important. We really do need our farmers. I can't emphasize that enough. Our food system in this country is amazing. We feed this country and a lot of the other parts of the world. So we really do urge people to take this issue seriously.
We're talking with John Shutsky, an extension specialist who focuses on agricultural safety and risk control. Mark Stevenson is here. He's an agricultural economist specializing in dairy markets and policy. Your situation on your farm, what you're seeing, and questions you have about COVID-19 on the farm. Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, Mark, you know, we've seen a lot of stockpiling at grocery stores, you know, hoarding of quantities of consumer products. Do you find that there is a similar thing going on in the farming industry, such as, you know, in terms of the season to the planting season beginning and personal protective equipment to operate farms safely? Mark, what are you seeing there?
Well, I don't think I've heard anything about hoarding at the farm level yet. But, you know, we did urge dairy producers fairly early on to consider what their personal protective equipment needs would be. It's not unusual for farms to have the M19 or N95 masks in place at the dairy because we have situations that are quite dusty and may have molds, and so farms do use those materials. And in point of fact, I think that there have been a few places where they've urged farms not to hoard material like that. And if they possibly had an unusually large supply, a big box that they'd ordered some time ago, to perhaps even make that short-term available to healthcare workers. But gloves are also another item that's used on farms with a great deal of regularity. Farms need these kinds of materials, and you know we just aren't expecting that they're going to be hoarding, or hope that they don't, but that they do have access to what they need.
John, if protective safety equipment isn't available for farmers, or if farmers run out, can they still be able to do the job right?
Kate, it's a really great question, and just to pick up on what Mark was talking about. As Mark said, we do recommend this time of the year in the vast majority of cases. Obviously, it's an issue this year, but we always recommend that when people are emptying a grain bin, they're moving corn or other products out of bins or even silage out of a silo. If it is dusty, we always recommend the N95 respirators. But if I go on to any of the safety supply catalogs now that people typically order these products from, they're impossible to get. So it does create a bit of a challenge. I don't think the gloves are as in short of a supply, but I will just say this. We would strongly recommend that you not say, well, it's a COVID year, so let's just ignore personal protective equipment. If there are ways to either postpone work here for a few weeks until maybe supplies become more available, if you are going to move dusty grain, if you could try to do it on a day where you could use the wind to your advantage, particularly if you're working outside, that's always strongly recommended, to stay upwind from a cloud of dust. One of the things we're concerned about with N95 respirators and some of the respiratory issues that farmers deal with as a result of their work, a lot of people end up with things like some either chronic or short-term bronchitis, or it can exacerbate asthma for people who have underlying asthma conditions. So we don't want people getting sick from grain dust or other types of dust exposures this spring, because if they were to develop the COVID-19, their lungs and their immune system may have a little bit more of a challenge with fighting off and dealing with the infection. So we do, again, we need to really take this stuff seriously. Avoidance is always the best strategy, staying out of bins. If you're able to get your bin emptied, you've got a grain bin and you get all the grain out of it. We normally, you know, people like to go in and shovel and sweep and get those last few tens or dozens of bushels out. And this year in particular, it's probably okay to wait and, again, avoid going in if at all possible.
We have John Shutsky, director of the UW Center for Agricultural Safety and Health, for the hour, along with dairy policy analyst Mark Stevenson, who heads up the Center for Dairy Profitability. Do you work at a dairy processing plant? What concerns do you have about the coronavirus? Are you reluctant to go to work? Join in with your questions, your tips, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Coming up, we'll look at ports in this evolving crisis. We'll be back after this news update on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Food producers are operating almost as normal, at least for now. Meat processors, dairies, and vegetable producers, they say that they're open for business, ready to feed the country. But food distributors and wholesalers in the middle of that supply chain are performing logistical miracles, redirecting truckloads of food from shuttered businesses to grocery stores. So where are you along the supply chain? How are you adapting as a food producer or distributor? Be part of this conversation, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have UW-Madison's John Shutsky, an Extension Agricultural Safety and Health Specialist, and Mark Stevenson, who's an ag economist who studies the dairy industry, and they stay with us for the hour. We heard from Joe in Green Bay, called in but couldn't stay with us. Joe says that they're struggling to find dry milk in stores since the coronavirus outbreak, and Joe says they used to buy it for big batches of hot chocolate. Mark, could Joe's experience be a sign of the market being under pressure?
It certainly is. We've had consumers, you know, that are shifting very rapidly from their ordinary food channels to different ones, new ones. So a good example, of course, is the food that's eaten out of the home is being taken back at home, either from pickup at restaurants or through retail chains. And the surge in buying at retail chains has been remarkable. Both the beverage milk, fluid milk, that stores have been working hard to keep stocked, and the dry products, the ones that are pantry stable, those are not readily available now as people have grabbed them to move. So it's a temporary setback for us, but you know, it takes a little bit of time before we shift from the processing of a product like barrel cheese to powdered milk.
Do we know if dairy producers are trying to ramp up production right now of any type of commodity like dry milk because of the coronavirus?
Well, we've certainly had changes in processing going on. But as I said, that's not something we do just at the drop of a
flip
hat.
Flip of a switch. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it takes a few days or weeks before we can actually make that product switch happen very quickly. We have to perhaps have extra shifts that are being run in fluid plants right now. And maybe we have some plants, cheese plants, that would be happy to give up some of that milk that they're taking in to other plants that might need it. So it's just a logistics issue, but will be rapidly solved, I think.
Well, let's bring in a call now. Corey is with us from Fort Atkinson this morning. Hi, Corey.
Good morning. The reason I'm calling in, I'm editor Horst Dayman, know Mark and John very well. Good morning. In Executive Order 8 for Governor Tony Evers on Friday afternoon, there was a provision in there for farm auctions that they could continue. It's under the food and distribution part, but it's very specific language. Retail establishments and auctions that sell animals for production agriculture, animal feed, and agricultural equipment and parts are exempt from the order. And why is that important? As John and Mark were talking about, there's some farms that are very financially stressed right now and living week to week for feed, and some of them need to disperse. And rural broadband is an issue you talked about at 6:30 here. In a lot of rural communities, this is the vehicle to conduct business. So that was the point I wanted to raise in the COVID-19.
Yeah, Corey, thank you so much. Mark, are you concerned there that auctions can continue? I envision an auction that is live in person, not online, where bidders are shoulder to shoulder.
Well, that's true. That would be a gathering where we're pulled together. And some of our auctions, like even the more formal ones at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the floor trading has been halted and it's gone to all electronic. But at the farm level, we don't have electronic auctions. We have live person-to-person auctions. So that can be an issue. We've had some exemptions, though, even at the national level. A good one might be to mention that food transportation has been given an exemption for the hours that they can drive and serve. So a dairy milk hauler would have timed out and would have had to pull the truck over if they'd been on the road for an excessive period of time. But they've been given an exemption to be able to continue moving milk and other food products across the country as needed.
Taking a look at the broadband issue, small farms that don't have a direct-to-consumer online presence, a whole direct-to-consumer infrastructure, can they ramp up to that, or is that going to be really difficult for them?
I think that's going to be difficult in the short run. John has certainly done some work with surveys on this, but we have a lot of farms that don't have that access.
John, what can you add there?
Okay, we are a little bit concerned about that. We did a survey that was just published in a journal called Computers and Electronics in Agriculture here in Wisconsin. We did surveys of about 1,000 farmers and also about 400 what we call agricultural service providers. And we were actually surprised, like 80% of our farming households and businesses do have internet. That would include either a smartphone or a hardwired internet connection, whether that's DSL or most typically cable internet. But that leaves a full 1/5 or 20% of our households who don't have internet. So we are concerned about that. I would not be surprised if we would see perhaps in the future some alternative avenues for people participating in auctions and other types of sales and have the ability to do it online, either through calling in or maybe via the web. So I think that that's a possibility. But the lack of internet on those 20% of households, that is something that is concerning. And I would hope that in the future we do pay attention. We see that this was perhaps an issue with people being able to get the most up-to-date information, being able to connect to some of the resources that are out there. We obviously have television, and that's, I think, a source of information for a lot of people. But the broadband thing is of concern, and it's also a concern for school kids that are home and probably going to be home through at least the majority of the summer or springtime, I should say, and potentially a disadvantage. So, again, something that we, I think, are going to need to really talk about long term.
We're talking with John Shutsky, an Extension Ag Safety and Health Specialist at UW-Madison. Mark Stevenson as well, Director of the UW Center for Dairy Profitability, looking at farms, what they face as we see the spread of COVID-19. Your questions, your situations, they're welcome. Is COVID-19 affecting your farm profits? How significant has the change been? What adjustments have you made on the farm? Can you do social distancing? And what are you employing right now? Who are you employing? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. John, let's look at the mental health of farmers. Hundreds of farmers have killed themselves across 9 Midwestern states from 2014 to 2018. What are farmers finding most stressful right now?
Well, you know, this is such a new situation. I've not had a lot of conversation because I've not been out and about doing the workshops that we were doing heavy duty as late as the middle part of February. But I have to think that the majority of people are concerned about the financial situation, as we've been talking about. I think the other thing that's scary for people and that does create a huge amount of stress and risk, I think, for some of the suicide risks that you mentioned is the unknown. We just don't really quite know what the next several months are going to look like. And when people feel it's a sense of control, when you feel that you have no control over the situation, that's when things get stressful. And we have the lack of control over the future of our financial situation, but also just, you know, when are kids going to be able to be kids again? When are families going to be able to go back out and go to the park and not have to worry about keeping 6 feet away from people? Those are the things that are stressful for people, whether you live on a farm or here in the Madison area. So we are concerned. I will say this. This is also, though, a time when we talk about that lack of control. This is also a time when people are probably spending more time together. They feel maybe like they're cooped up. We do encourage couples and families to go for walks together, to talk about the situation. I know with both of my kids, who are now in their 20s, we've had a lot of heart-to-heart conversations about planning for the future, thinking about how we're going to deal with the financial situation, talking about best case scenarios, but also worst case scenarios from a financial situation, and then thinking through, okay, what will we do if it's one of those scenarios? How will we make it through this? How will we stay close as a family? How will we adjust our financial picture so that we can make it through? And that helps to give people a sense of control. So at a time when people feel the most likely to like check out and withdraw and, you know, lay around because they don't feel well and they just feel burned out by the situation, now is actually the time to build those connections, to purposely work to continue the relationships and the activities that will help to regain some sense of control.
Mark, do you find also that, you know, farmers tend to maybe take on too much, or if a worker can't come to work, they assume their workload as well? That in some sense that they can just keep taking things on themselves. Do you see that at all?
Oh, I think that farmers are some of the hardest working people that I know. And you know, in my opinion, and I'm not semi-professional like John is here in this area, but this is one of the reasons for some of the incredible stress that they're feeling. They work hard and they are proud people. They want to pay their bills, but perhaps they can't. And if they can't pay those bills, then they get despondent. So over the long term, I think that's been a big problem for our dairies.
We have ag economist Mark Stevenson, who directs the UW Center for Dairy Profitability. John Shutsky here, an Extension Ag Safety and Health Specialist. Do you employ workers on your farm? Is your farm practicing social distancing? Have you found this difficult? Still time to join in, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Economists are out with a new report this week projecting a decline in farmers' sales of up to $689 million and a payroll decline of about $100 million, and it could mean a billion-dollar hit to our economy from March to May. And this report is by researchers at Colorado State calculating the short-term financial collapse in farmers' local supply chains due to social distancing and the closure of schools and restaurants. So farmers, how are you making it? Have you changed your operations? Still time, 800-642-1234. We have dairy policy analyst Mark Stevenson and extension specialist John Shutsky with us. Let's take another call now. Scott is with us from Elk Mound, Wisconsin. Hi, Scott.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
You know, as the owner of Elk Mound Seed, I guess we're open and we sell all the agricultural small grains, including corn and beans, to farmers. And I'm just wondering, I have to think they're concerned about how they're going to pay for their seeds this spring and if anything's being done with that.
Scott, thank you. Mark, could you address that? How will farmers pay these upfront costs they need to put in their crops?
Well, it's normal for farms to be working with and talking with their bankers at this time of the year or even earlier, because this is when we anticipate farms need larger operating loans for normal planting expenses in the season. And they pay those loans down over the course of the year. I have urged dairy farmers to take a look at their expected cash flows or shortfalls this time of the year, in particular this year, and get in and speak with your banker earlier. You want to establish the need that you have for farm loans this year early and to have that discussion with them. If the banker feels as though you're not credit worthy, then you may need to look, at, is there another source for you, or what should I in fact be doing? I hate to say this, but I do think that there are some people who probably do need to face whether or not they can have another year of serious shortfalls in cash, and do they want to erode the equity they have in the farm if they're getting close to a retirement age anyway. We have seen a number of farms go out that were in that circumstance in the last year or two.
Scott, thank you for the call. Let's try now Owen in Waiawiga. Hi, Owen.
Yeah, good morning. So I got a few concerns here, and I'll try to keep it as concise as possible. But I'm a young beginning dairyman in the state of Wisconsin, and what I have found when I've looked at buying my own farm, buying the land and everything, I do own some cattle and equipment, is I've been told numerous times if you're not milking 2,000 cows or more, you're not going to be able to make it. Now, the biggest problem I see with this is I think a smaller farm can be sustainable using practices that concentrate more on growing everything on the farm and maybe buying some minerals and things outside of the farm. But I still believe that a smaller model is good. And I also am concerned about we continue to consolidate and offer more and more employment to outside foreign citizens, which I believe this is a really point that has to be listened to today. These farmers that are consolidated, they're putting their people in small or large groups in small housing. And what happens if those people get sick? Who's going to come and milk the cows on a 2,000 cow dairy when all the help gets sick? So another problem I have with this is who's representing a farmer in democracy if all the labor is disenfranchised?
Owen, thank you for the call. Mark, can you address that, the situation at CAFOs, at the large dairy operations, how they might be operating right now in the face of COVID-19?
Well, I think that most of the large operations are trying very hard to operate as they normally do. I suspect they're instructing their workers to try to keep a greater social distance and to do the hand washing and cleanliness routines as much as possible. But they do need labor in the short term. We have seen farms beginning to transition a little bit from the intensive labor that's used, for example, in a milking parlor to more robotic milking units. And I suspect that's something longer term that's going to be more employed. We've been moving that direction for the last couple of years at any rate. But just in short response to the caller, we do see small dairy farms that are profitable. We look at farm level financial records every year, and it's not just that small farms are unprofitable and big farms are profitable. We see profitability across all different business models in the dairy industry, but there is more variation in the levels of profitability at the smaller farm.
John, is the coronavirus possibly tougher on big farms versus small farms? What can you add there?
Kate, I think at this point it's too early to say. I mean, obviously, if we have workers who are dispersed in local communities who come to work every day, they're coming in some cases from households where you may or may not have children, or maybe parents that are living or multiple families living together. So there's probably some additional risk for the bigger farms that have more employees. But I think, you know, in our work in extension and the research and the resources that we're trying to get out to communities, we're trying to support the smaller farms like Owen. We're trying to support the bigger farms with what they're doing. We're also, I wanted to also go back to Scott's question as a person who deals with seed and other types of farm inputs. When we look at this whole impact, we're also wanting to support them because their impact on the community is just so critical, and they're part of that supply chain. And the stress is not only for the farmers, but it's for people like Scott.
Let's bring in Mary now in La Crosse. Hi, Mary.
Hi. My question relates to what's going on in Washington right now with the divide between is the money going to go to big industries like airlines and or is who is speaking for getting it to people directly to the farmers where it's so desperately needed?
Mary, thanks. Mark, is the USDA able to do enough for small farms and the farmers who need it?
Well, I think we're trying to do that. You know, I will certainly say that Washington is trying to take care of the really big problems and issues first and worry about somewhat smaller ones later on. So there has been a fair amount of discussion in Washington right now as opening up, for example, the dairy margin coverage program again in the middle of the year to let dairy farmers perhaps, this has not happened yet, so don't run out to a farm service agency, but to perhaps re-enroll and sign up at a higher level. That would get more money to smaller operations rather quickly as needed and could help again this year.
Can you explain what that is, proposal?
Yes, it's the dairy margin coverage program is an insurance-like product. Farmers can decide what level of protection they need and can purchase this insurance. And the margin is the difference between the milk price and their single largest price of producing milk, which is feed prices. So if that margin gets small, then you get a payment dollar for dollar between the level you tried to protect and what the margin is calculated to be. Last year, farmers were not expecting that we would have any payments this year because it was thought to be a price recovery year. And so at the time of sign up, about half the farms did not buy up this year at higher levels of protection. And if they can use that program, that's a means of getting dollars directly to dairy farmers and rather quickly. So perhaps that will be opened up again.
Yeah, so what you're seeing, just a totally different year now as the spread of the coronavirus. Mark, what are you watching for here, especially on the farm?
With regard to the spread, well, of coronavirus, we are... I've been looking at least at the shape of what we have seen in other countries or other states and regions in terms of the spread of the cases. And one thing that I see that seems relatively apparent is that the rate of new cases picks up somewhere between day 7 and day 10 of the exposure that a state has had. We are now in Wisconsin in about day 8. Oh, we had cases much earlier than that, but I'm talking about more than one.
Yeah.
So we're starting to see the big number of cases.
Mark, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
And John, thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having us.
Mark Stevenson, Dairy Policy Analyst and Director of the UW Center for Dairy Profitability. John Shutsky, an Extension Agricultural and Health Safety Specialist at UW-Madison. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The State Capitol Report is next here on the Ideas Network.